If you want to know what a state-of-the-art election system looks like, forget about the U.S. Look around the world. Check out what some of our Democratic neighbors are doing. Or you could just call Pippa Norris. She runs the Electoral Integrity Project at Harvard and the University of Sydney, and it monitors elections in 153 countries. She told Raymond Tungekar that a lot of them do a better job than the U.S.
What we do is we rank all elections worldwide. And so you obviously have the cases like Sweden and Norway, but they're kind of predictable, the fact that they have good elections. There are also a whole bunch of newer democracies which manage to do very well, like Estonia, Lithuania, Costa Rica.
Slovenia. That surprised me. I didn't realize that they had more reliable elections than us.
They do. Even very poor countries like Benin and Cape Verde in Africa manage to have very good elections, according to our expert assessments. And we've kind of lagged behind.
Well, what I found shocking about your research is the U.S. ranked among the worst among
That's
Western
right.
democracies, which to me, I was just shocked by that. Why is that? Why did we score so low?
So worldwide, 153 countries that we've ranked so far in all the elections, and the U.S. ranks 52nd, and it's the worst of all the established democracies. In America, it's to do with how elections are run, and it's the partisan nature that we expect, basically, partisan officials to run impartial local administration. And there's a conflict of interest in that. And then the second reason, we don't have a single body. So look over the border to Canada, and they have Elections Canada, which has a tremendous reputation. Canada is also obviously a federal country with provinces, each of whom have different units running elections. But Elections Canada sets the standards, provides civic education, it provides training. It looks at the procedures which are used, as well as the electoral laws, and oversees also any complaints or problems which are likely to arise. And it's a very impartial unit.
So it sounds like you're saying that the way our elections are set up are it's so decentralized, and there's so many, it's down to the state and local level that I guess it just makes me wonder: can an American election be rigged?
So remember, this is also an asset in the sense that to rig it, you'd actually have to do it across all of these local precincts. So the broad intentional vote rigging is really off the table. But just think about this. So you're a Russian hacker, and you know that Pennsylvania or Florida or any of the other states is going to be close, and you go into one Broward County, say, and you do have some sort of access to hacking the official register, so when people turn up to vote, they find their names aren't listed, even though they got official notification. Now, that could cause immediately chaos, and it could create a tremendous army of lawyers, obviously.
Huh. But, I mean, could that really happen?
I think we shouldn't underestimate the fact that elections are kind of the dusty corner of public administration in America. A lot of our technology was bought in 2002. It was the Help America Vote Act. And Congress, after Florida, produced a lot of money, about $6 billion, and many states took that up and they bought their machines, but they haven't been updated. And some of the machines that were bought are running Windows 2000. This is the land. This is the land meant to be the internet, which we discovered. But we're way behind when it comes to local. And remember, of course, local administration—they're very reluctant to spend money on this because you only have an election every 2 years, and they've got many other things they're trying to spend money on. So it often gets very low down in people's priorities until you get something go wrong, in which case everybody gets worried.
Well, there's another problem that seems pretty unsolvable. I mean, right now, both Republicans and Democrats have different concerns, right? I mean, the Republicans are primarily concerned about too many people voting fraudulently, whereas Democrats are concerned about voters being unfairly excluded from voting. But there's a piece that you wrote recently where you suggest that those issues don't actually have to be mutually exclusive. How so?
So, for example, if we had a system whereby you had to have voter ID, but the state issued that to everybody on the voter register, and it issued it free, and it issued it well ahead, effectively, to distribute to everybody, then you'd have a card with a photo on it, and then when you go to the polls, that photo should also be listed on the voter register. Many countries do this. For example, India, one of the poorest countries, has 800 million people voting, right? You can imagine the incredible challenges of doing that. It has 1 million polling workers, and yet, when the Indian voter goes to vote, there's their photo ID and there's their photo on the voter register. So it's not basically rocket science, right? And then for the people, in particular Democrats who are concerned about voter inclusion, I think, again, we have to say, of course, that has to be part of the American tradition. We're a country which believes that everybody who's eligible should vote, and we should really make sure that there are convenience voting facilities which are secure. These aren't trade-offs. They're things that we can come together. And we just need to get rid of the bitterness of the process right now.
Well, I want to run another idea by you, one that, you know, a lot of countries around the world have implemented, mandatory voting, where voting is like filing a tax return. It's, you know, it's required by law.
Right.
In your estimation, does that work?
So part of my time I spend every year in Sydney, in Australia, where they have compulsory voting, mandatory voting. It has pros and cons. On the one hand, you obviously do improve turnout, especially if there's some sort of fine or sanction for not voting. Now, not every country with mandatory voting actually has a real sanction. But if you have that, then most people do vote. And so right now, our vote could go up a lot, maybe by even 30%. Against that, you have to say it changes the incentives for how people behave. So you might get many people voting who aren't actually that concerned about the outcome, might not know that much about. They might make more of an effort if they know they have to vote, but that's not guaranteed. In addition, the parties actually spend, and the candidates spend less time canvassing because they know people are going to vote. They have much less effort. So our get-out-the-vote drives, which is a tremendous asset in civic society, if you bring in compulsory voting, then to some extent they'll, you know, cut back on that.
So let's say, you know, a new country just popped up on the map with its own citizens, and they ask you, Pippa Norris, to devise an equitable and functional voting system. What would that look like?
Well, I do quite a bit of consultancy around the world, and I used to work for UNDP, heading up the democratic governance, so I've got a bit of experience of this. Again, think about America. What we have is a winner-take-all system. And we've always known in political science, if you have a winner-take-all, meaning that one side wins, the other side loses, it's a majoritarian, and it's a presidential system, it really does increase the bitterness of any outcome. And it makes it very difficult to actually for the losers to accept it. So other countries have other types of electoral systems. Simplest one is proportional representation. In that, you don't vote in your district for a single candidate. Instead, you vote for the party. The party will put up a list of its candidates in that district. And what that does is it's actually much easier to have many more parties. So the smaller parties who are right now basically written out of the race, whether they're the Greens or Libertarians, they would stand a chance because their votes would be much more proportional to their representation in Congress. So it gives everybody a much fairer allocation of votes to seats, and it means it's less of a winner-take-all system.
Pippa Norris talking with Raymond Tangekar. She runs the Electoral Integrity Project at Harvard and the University of Sydney, and she's the author of Why Elections Fail.